This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky. Take away everything and make everybody feel high.
And good morning, just a minute before 9 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Busy Thursday morning lineup for you in about a half hour on A Deeper Look. Host Linda Olson Osterlund speaks with attorney Stephen Downs of Project Salaam about the case of a Muslim man who was targeted by an FBI sting and convicted, but now documents indicate it was a case of mistaken identity. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, writer and activist Kevin Gray discusses the Supreme Court decision to cut a key aspect of the landmark 1965 Voting Rights Act. He also weighs in on the George Zimmerman trial for the murder of teen Trayvon Martin. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews No Violet Bulawayo about her new novel of Africa called We Need New Names. And at 11:30, the film show features news and interviews about the independent film scene in Portland. But first, it's Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell, and that is next on KBOO.
Good in the Hood returns to celebrate its 20th year, June 20th through the 30th. Good in the Hood is a multicultural music and food festival featuring a parade, information village, kids space arts and crafts, and an ethnic marketplace. Saturday, June 29th, Good in the Hood will be at Lilith's Albina Park in North Portland with music, and KBOO will broadcast live from the park from 2 to 7 p.m. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Singled out by NSA surveillance, targeted by an FBI sting, in 2007, Yassim Arif was convicted of one charge of money laundering for witnessing a loan. Now, documents released through the Freedom of Information Act reveal the FBI got it wrong from the start. It was a case of mistaken identity, and the feds knew it before the case went to trial. Join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, and my guest, attorney Stephen Downs, on A Deeper Look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. It's a case of mistaken identity, right here on KBOO.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. Well, a shout out to the Gay Yellow Pages. Thanks so much for sponsoring the show. And, well, let's start with five craziest reactions to today's. Let me get this microphone pointed to me. You're supposed to point the microphone to you. I learned that somewhere. Let's see. Here we go. The five craziest reactions to today's marriage equality rulings. This is from Zach Bosha on Think Progress. Though the strong majorities of Americans who support marriage equality and equal federal benefits for gay couples, celebrated the historic Supreme Court rulings this week. Several prominent conservatives reacted with fear and fury, though the conservative establishment, by and large, had little to say about the marriage equality cases. The vitriol that came from these particular conservatives stood out. Number one, Rand Paul and Glenn Beck worry about Muslims and animals. In a video captured by BuzzFeed's Andrew Kaczynski, the purportedly libertarian senator and popular talk show host worry about a host of bizarre logical consequences of the moves towards marriage equality, with Beck asking, "Who are you to say that Who are you to say that if I'm a devout Muslim, I come over here and I have three wives, who are you to say if I'm an American citizen that I can't have multiple wives?" End quote. Paul nodded, saying, quote, "People take it to one extension further. Does it have to be humans? I'm kind of with you. We should not say, oh, we're punting on it. Marriage can be anything," end quote. Secondly, Mike Huckabee channels Jesus tear ducts on Twitter. The former governor and leading GOP presidential candidate had two words: Jesus wept. He later elaborated, saying that the Supreme Court declared itself bigger than God. Number three, congressmen declare the apocalypse is imminent. At a press conference Think Progress watched after the ruling, Representative Tim Walberg declared that society itself is at risk and cannot continue. At the same presser, Representative Gohmert, Republican of Texas, said that same-sex marriage was usually tried at the end of a great civilization. Walberg said Gohmert's comments echoed House Judiciary Chair Bob Goodlatte, also a Republican from Virginia, who said, "Preserving the institution of traditional marriage is crucial to the stability of our society," end quote. And fourth, Ralph Reed sees an Orwellian threat to federalism, rule of law, and Western civilization. I'm not even going to bother to quote him. And number five, the National Organization for Marriage suggests that the Supreme Court is corrupt and smells bad. The leading anti-marriage equality organization's press release blamed a conspiracy of homosexual and liberal lower circuit judges for the court's rulings. Quote, "There is a stench coming from this case that has now stained the Supreme Court," said Brian Brown in a confusingly mixed metaphor. All right. So that's at Think Progress. .org. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And here's the news I don't know the answer to. Maybe you do if you want to call in. I'm a transgendered gal. Hi there. I'm a transgendered gal. I don't know a song to that. Maybe I should create one. Anyway, married back when I was a guy to a dyke. Did just before I transitioned, I said, let's flamboozle the corporations because we might need to. And as it turned out, we really did need to. Just within the last couple of years, really came in handy. So, got married. But the Defense of Straight People's Bigotry About Marriage Act, or DOMA, has been struck down by the Supreme Court, but Oregon still denies equal rights to queers like us. So if we women's in my house want to be married in Oregon, or rather if we want to have our marriage honored properly so I don't have to worry about my gal getting the house after I kick off, do I have to cross the Columbia River and ride that free train to a free state and get married there and then come back? Or would Oregon say that even that marriage was invalid? Call in with your answer if you like. 503-231-8187. Call in those legal eagles out there, or gay rights activists. Now I want to change topics. It's the global warming disaster that time forgot. And it was just this week. Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hello. Hello, Calgary, just north by northeast of here, by a few hundred miles, and it's a city of comparable size to Portland, Oregon, but it seems to have fallen off the face of the earth so far as U.S. media is concerned. I say that because at least 100,000 people have been evacuated from the area of Calgary and nearby Medicine Hat. Can you imagine the disruption if 100,000 people were evacuated from the Portland metro area in, say, McMinnville? But that is exactly what has happened, as floodwaters rolled in, shutting down Calgary, which hosted the Winter Olympics in 1988. Schools were scheduled to reopen today as residents return. Here's a sampling of this week's news articles, along with my confusion as to why this is not a story. Could it be because it really points at global warming? But anyway, this from CBC: evacuation orders for most homes across Calgary were lifted Monday, while Alberta Premier Alison Redford has warned the provincial cleanup effort could take up to 10 years. Quote, "I promise you that on behalf of the government of Alberta, we will do everything that it takes for people to rebuild their homes and rebuild their lives and rebuild their communities," end quote. Redford, who addressed the media Monday, said the flooding would have a huge effect on the provincial government. a huge effect on the provincial budget. The premier announced that the province had approved a $1 billion preliminary emergency fund to deal with the funding. Part of that will be for cash cards for residents who have not been able to return home as of last Monday. They are returning home now. That funding will start to be handed out in the next week or two, she said. We talk about responding, we talk about renewal, and we talk about rebuilding, she said. She also said the province is now in the renewal phase. She stressed that people should be wary of misinformation. Please go to the government websites to make sure the information you have is actually true. Evacuation orders across Calgary continued to lift Monday. And then she said just before noon, that noon mountain time, that the Bow and Elbow River levels were a third of what they were when they crested. It's still very dangerous out there. You're still in a local state of emergency, she said. You must stay off the riverbank. You must stay off the river pathways. Even if they look safe, we don't know what has happened in terms of erosion. Now, I'm passing this on to give an idea of how huge this disaster was and to frame my confusion as to why this is not a story. 100,000 people right near us evacuated. And departing from this article, downtown went dark and quiet because power was cut because it was rolling in water. Returning to the article, remember again that electricity and water don't mix. You have to be incredibly careful, said Nenshi. In terms of power outages, Nenshi said NMAX is working hard to restore electricity, NMAX being the local power company. Many neighborhoods are back on the grid, but it's a slow process, he warned. It's not just flipping a switch to turn the power on, said Nenshi. So be patient. I know it's really tough. I know it's really, really frustrating. About 2,500 people showed up at McMahon Stadium in Calgary on Monday to volunteer to help residents settle back into their homes. Those people will help knock on the doors or houses of houses that have been evacuated and provide residents with information on flood recovery and other community resources. Continuing with the article, we are anticipating, Calgary's Southeast Member of Parliament Jason Kenney said, we are anticipating that we will begin to see a drop down in the number of Canadian troops that are deployed right now, end quote. The Bank of Montreal issued a statement late Monday morning estimating that total losses of Calgary floods would be in the $3 to $5 billion range. Kenney said there is no way to tell how much damage the flood has caused at this point. Tap water remains safe for consumption. Across the city, people were starting to assess the damage at their homes and begin the long process of cleaning up. Talking about the flooding in Calgary, Alberta, and the lack of priority U.S. news coverage. I mean, it was there. You could find it. But it's just bizarre to me to think that so many thousands of people could be displaced right here on the North American continent, and somehow it's just kind of not a story. From grist.org, the heavy rains also appear to have shifted the earth beneath a pipeline near the city of Fort McMurray, triggering a leak of synthetic crude oil. On Monday, energy company Enbridge said a cleanup operation was underway in a wetlands area. Initial estimates place the size of the spill at 500 to 750 barrels. From Reuters, the spill, which may have been caused by heavy flooding that has paralyzed the Alberta city of Calgary, headquarters of Canada's oil and gas industry, forced Enbridge to shut two much larger lines as a precaution, threatening a serious disruption in the flow of oil sands crude. So what role might climate change have played in flooding this hot spot of climate-changing oil extraction? This from Vancouver Observer. Environment Canada climate scientist David Phillips said this storm was very unusual for Calgary, where systems tend to move on quickly. And departing from the text, actually, there was a 100-year flood just a few years ago. So it's rapidly getting less uncommon. But quoting Phillips, the storm just kind of stayed put. The storm stood around like an unwanted house guest and wouldn't leave. That kind of rainy weather may become frequent in the years to come as the Earth's climate warms up, end quote. And I include that quote just to point out that, yes, it could happen here. What's been happening to this region, to Portland, while other areas suffer terrific droughts, terrifying droughts? Well, I guess I'd rather have the rain than a drought, but, you know, it could happen here, couldn't it? Latest news in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, is that a major rail bridge this morning is slowly sinking into the now-roaring Bow River. The bridge is still holding derailed rail cars, which contain a petroleum product, perhaps diesel. At this time, the rail cars are still dangling over the river as the bridge, which has sunk 2 feet, continues to collapse. Your comments, questions, 503-231-8187. Emergency crews are at the scene of a train derailment in a bridge over the swollen Bow River in Calgary. This is according to nationalpost.com. The Bonnybrook Bridge is falling and slowly sinking into the river. At approximately 3:30 a.m. local time, the train derailed outside of Canadian Pacific's Ogden Yard. The five train cars are carrying a petroleum product, but Emergency Management Director Bruce Burrell says they are not leaking. Quote, the bridge is continuing to drop as we speak, so that the distance between the failure point and where the bridge decking is starting to open up more, he said, so it appears that the bridge is failing. All right, now I'd like to turn to issues of the secret police in the United States. Secret police! Reuters photographer Namir Nour al-Din and his driver Saeed Shmakh. Remember them? They were in that famous WikiLeaks video where the helicopter pilot was having such a good time blasting them to little bits with his handy-dandy heavy-duty machine gun. Journalists. Danny Casolaro, anyone remember that name? Gary Webb exposed the CIA Contra cocaine connection. Talented guy who was able to shoot himself twice in the head on his own porch for no reason. Not easy to shoot yourself twice in the head. Richard Clark, a State Department official turned special advisor to the United States presidents, said the early morning auto crash of Michael Hastings last week in Los Angeles was consistent with a car cyber attack, raising new questions about the death of the award-winning journalist. This is from Russia Today. Hastings died last week when his 2013 Mercedes C250 coupe collided with a tree in Los Angeles, California on the morning of June 18th. He was reportedly traveling at a high rate of speed and failed to stop at a red light moments before the single car crash. He was only 33. Speaking to a Huffington Post this week, Clark said that a cyber attack waged at the vehicle could have caused a fatal collision. Quoting, what has been revealed as a result of some research at universities is that it's relatively easy to hack your way into the control system of a car and to do such things as cause acceleration when the driver doesn't want acceleration, to throw on the brakes when the driver doesn't want the brakes on, to launch an airbag, end quote. That's Clark talking to the Huffington Post. He said, you can do some really highly destructive things now through hacking a car, and it's not that hard. So if there were a cyber attack on the car, and I'm not saying there was, Clark continued, I think whoever did it would probably get away with it, end quote. Now, departing from that article, notice that he didn't say remotely hack. It is possible to remotely hack in some ways. And that new Mercedes and a lot of new cars have the capacity to actually change the braking, steering, flash the lights, that sort of thing, through the computer. Returning to the article from Russia Today, the Los Angeles Police Department said they don't expect foul play was involved in the crash, but an investigation has been opened nonetheless. In an email reportedly sent by Hastings hours before the crash, he told colleagues that he thought he was the target of a federal investigation. Hey, the feds are interviewing my close friends and associates, Hastings wrote 15 hours before the crash. Also, he wrote, I'm onto a big story and I need to go off the radar for a bit. All the best. Hope to see you all soon, end quote. And that's the last anyone ever heard of Mr. Hastings. The email was supplied to KTLA News in Los Angeles by Staff Sergeant Joseph Biggs, who says he met Hastings while the journalist was embedded in Afghanistan in 08. It was reportedly sent to a handful of Hastings' associates and was blind copied to Biggs. Quoting Biggs, speaking to KTLA, I just said it doesn't seem like him. I don't know. I just had this gut feeling and it just really bothered me. Reporters at BuzzFeed, where Hastings works, say they received an email from their colleague, but the Federal Bureau of Investigation issued a statement 2 days after Hastings' death to quash rumors that they had been looking into the reporter. At no time was Michael Hastings under investigation by the FBI, FBI spokeswoman Laura Eimuller said. According to the Associated Press, however, Hastings' fingerprints were on file with the FBI and were used by the Bureau to identify his body after flames consumed much of the auto wreckage last week. Quoting Clark again, I believe the FBI, when they say they weren't investigating him, that was very unusual, and I'm sure they checked very carefully before they said that. End quote. Doesn't say how sarcastically he said that anyway. He also said, I'm not a conspiracy guy. In fact, I've spent most of my life knocking down conspiracy theories, he said, but my rule has always been you don't knock down a conspiracy theory until you can prove it wrong. And in the case of Michael Hastings, what evidence is available publicly is consistent with car cyber attack, and the problem is that you can't prove it, end quote. Clark, 62 years old, spent nearly two decades at the Pentagon before relocating to the White House, where he served under President Ronald Reagan and both Presidents Bush. He served as special advisor to President George W. Bush on cybersecurity until leaving the administration in 2003, and is currently the chairman and CEO of Good Harbor Security Risk Management, LLC. More from therap.com, which says, Michael Hastings' death conspiracy theories, there's that word again, Although there is no conspiracy mentioned in the text, I'm going to quote here. Last Wednesday, WikiLeaks tweeted that Hastings had consulted with one of its lawyers just a few hours before his death. Though it has offered no additional information beyond that so far, aside from tributes to their fallen friends and colleague, the journalists who knew Hastings have been largely silent on his passing. In the absence of further facts, media outlets are now trotting out the experts to speculate on whether or not the LAPD story is sound. On Monday, automotive blog Jalopnik asked its on-call physicist, Dr. Stephen Grenade, if it was possible for Hastings' car to explode and burn like it did in the video of the wreck. Grenade said the scene looked more like a fire than an explosion, and that cars will burn quite happily if you get them going, but he added it's relatively rare for a collision to cause a fire. Just 3% of vehicle fires on U.S. highways between 2002 and 2005 are the result of a collision. That's over five a day, Grenade pointed out. And then I would just like to comment that, meanwhile, Jalopnik.com, by assuming that hacking the car had to be done remotely in the article, implies that the car was unlikely to have been hacked and that the supposition comes from urban legend ideas. There's that title, you know, with the word conspiracy. But there's no reason to assume that any sabotage was conducted remotely. U.S. secret police have a long history of messing with cars directly, hands-on. Nor does it have to be done by the FBI. It could be done by, well, any of a number of three-letter terrorist agencies, and I only say that because of, well, history. Also on RT.com, which is a good source, pointing to the U.S. at times. By the way, they're a lousy source on a number of other issues, which is why I like to read around on different international sources. But they write, the U.S. will not try to intercept NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden's flight. President Barack Obama said that during his tour to Africa, Obama announced that the U.S. will not be using military jets to go after Snowden, rejecting reports that America might force down a plane carrying the NSA leaker. Now, departing from that text, I'm sure that's why Snowden hasn't left the airport already. If he just hops on an Aeroflot and it has to go across U.S. territory at some point, U.S. airspace, well, sure, why not? Of course they'd do that. But returning to RT.com, the president specified the U.S. will not engage in wheeling, dealing, and trading to extradite Edward Snowden, adding that extradition will be carried out through legal channels. Quote, we've got a whole lot of business we do with China and Russia, and I'm not going to have one case of a suspect who we're trying to extradite suddenly being elevated to the point where I've got to start doing wheeling and dealing and trading on a whole host of other issues, Obama said. Obama said he has not spoken to Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping or Russia's President Putin about whistleblower Edward Snowden's extradition, adding that he shouldn't have to. That's according to Reuters. The president added he is still concerned about other documents Edward Snowden may have, saying not all of them have been released. Edward Snowden was charged with espionage by U.S. federal prosecutors on Friday and currently remains in an airport limbo in Russia's transit zone after he flew to Moscow's Sheremetyevo Airport from Hong Kong. Snowden hasn't been seen on the latest flight from Moscow to Havana, according to RT's Irina Galushko, who is one of the many journalists hunting for the whistleblower at Moscow's airport. Earlier, there were reports that Snowden would be on Aeroflot's flight to Havana, Cuba, that would have to pass through American airspace and the plane might be forced to land. Also from RT at the same time, Ecuador says it cannot grant asylum to Edward Snowden since he has not reached any of its diplomatic premises, i.e. the country itself or the embassy. And the interior minister of Ecuador revealed that in a press conference in the capital city, Quito. However, entering Ecuadorian soil, including the embassy in Moscow, is now impossible for Snowden. The U.S. government revoked his passport, which means he neither has a Russian visa nor can he buy a new flight ticket to Ecuador or Havana, a second transit point. Lucy Kafanov, reporting for RT, reports that from outside Moscow's Sheremetyevo Airport. Earlier, there were reports that Snowden would be on Aeroflot's flight to Havana that will pass through American airspace and the plane might be forced to land, repeating that information. It would be my speculation that WikiLeaks would be assisting in that sort of way. They have said that they are assisting him. The director of the CIA, this is also from RT.com, has outlined plans to launch a new campaign aimed at keeping the organization secret. The memo issued by Director John Brennan was itself leaked late on Wednesday. This is where I should play a recording going, ha ha. The Honor the Oath campaign has the intention of reinforcing, quote, our corporate culture of secrecy, end quote, according to the memo, which was obtained by Associated Press. The document has been labeled unclassified and for official use only. Brennan wrote that the campaign is a result of a CIA security review conducted last summer by the organization's former director, David Petraeus. After several high-profile anonymous leaks and publications by former senior officials were identified, according to Brennan, it also outlined the necessity to take a harsher stance on former employees who are intending to publish materials about their time in the organization. The CIA declined to comment on the leak after AP contacted it. Number to call with your comment, if you're quick, because we're out of here at the bottom of the hour, and then we'll have more terrific programming from Linda Olsen Osterlund. Ecuador's President Rafael Correa came up with a scalding online remark over criticism his country faced from the U.S. press for potentially granting asylum to NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. From RT, they've managed to focus attention on Snowden and on the wicked countries that support him, making us forget the terrible things against U.S. people and the whole world that he denounced, Correa said Wednesday in response to a Tuesday Washington Post editorial. The world order isn't only unjust, it's immoral, Correa added. I want to depart from that and just comment that I think Snowden has done a heroic thing, and that he falls now in a category with Assange and Manning and Daniel Ellsberg. And I was pleased, actually, to see that he looked after himself to the degree that he could. He put some of his information, a great deal of it apparently, in what's called button-down mode. In other words, he set it up so that there is further information, damaging, I suppose, information, to be released if he is messed with at there's some threshold, I don't know what. Button-down referring to holding a suicide vest with a switch that goes off if the thumb is released from the button and the spring connects the battery to the detonator, so that you can make demands while you're holding your suicide vest. And then just hope that you don't make any whoopsies, or that your demands aren't refused, I guess. Also, he got the heck out of the country, and thereby gave himself a little time before he would be snatched away. A little time to say what he's doing, I suppose, and what he intended, which might be the best you can do. I don't know where the heck you would go to get away from U.S. Secret police on planet Earth. Maybe in a submarine somewhere, or hitch a ride to the space station. I don't know how you do that. But it seems like he's done a pretty good job, considering. I guess he knew what he was dealing with. And you see from all of the anti-Snowden rhetoric and all the attempts to smear him as a spy, which obviously he is not. He's not a spy, because he could have made plenty of money just by passing that information along and disappearing and going into the protection of countries' secret services that he would be playing too. So I think it's ridiculous to call him a spy. It's obvious that he's doing what, at least mostly what he says that he's doing. And he is a hero. And so I cheer to hear that he is still, well, if not free, then at least loose from the American secret police. And I know I keep repeating that phrase, but that's because that's what we have. We have an imperium. We have secret police. And I'm trying to encourage you to break the mental blocks that say that we have defense and we have intelligence and all of these, well, Lakoff style phrases that really have to do with keeping you in line. We have secret police, people. We need to deal with it. And I also want to say that if you're in the secret police and if you're doing your thing, let's say infiltrating, and if you want to be like, well, for example, an FBI man who used to infiltrate pro-peace organizations in Dallas, and it bothers your conscience, well, you can get rid of that feeling of really wanting to off yourself. You could go public and say what you've been doing and why you think it's wrong. And for God's sake, take care of yourself first, because you can be shut up pretty quickly, can't you? You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. KBOO, where would you hear this sort of thing anywhere else? Ask yourself that. And you could be listening on a completely non-trackable, regular, plain old audio receiver. I kind of hope that you are. And if you're not, how about donating? KBOO.FM. Did you know the board has passed solidarity, good faith negotiations with the union? So come back. send back those contributions to KBOO.FM. Stay tuned. Linda Olsen-Osterlin, KBOO Portland.
Are you a veteran with hearing loss? Saturday, June 29th, Hearing Loss Solutions for Veterans will take place from 8:45 to 5:30 at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. It features workshops, panel discussions, and the newest technology. Lunch will be provided. Don't miss Hearing Loss Solutions for Veterans at 8:45 a.m. Saturday, June 29th at the Oregon Convention Center. Pre-register today at hamiltoncaptel.com/veterans.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look. I'm your host, Linda Olsen-Osterlin. Thanks to whistleblower Edward Snowden, we're now all aware of the expanded government surveillance inside the United States, and I know that many of you in the KBOO audience already were aware of it. But we're being asked by our government to believe that these capabilities and these activities are necessary for our safety, and to trust that they won't abuse these powers. Now, I think in our listening audience, many of us know you can't trust the federal government. I mean, you certainly can trust individuals, and you can trust certain aspects of things that are done with you. But when it comes to state security, no, you can't trust the federal government. Well, today's topic pulls aside the veil of government secrecy in a particular